Welcome to Great Minds, and our guest today is the CPO and co-founder of Optible, Boško Milikić. Boško and his team are doing some incredible work sitting at the intersection of what's arguably the hottest space in the business, period, which is that intersection of monetization, data, and privacy. They're doing some groundbreaking work. We're going to get into a conversation about the privacy sandbox that Optible has created and a lot of other stuff. So really thrilled to have you here on Great Minds, Boško. A hearty welcome.
Hey, thanks so much, Matthew, for having me. I'm looking forward to it.
So, Boško, I want to start in an unusual place, and that's to talk about Montreal and McGill. McGill University doesn't get talked about a lot, but it is one of the great universities, not just in Canada, but North America, produces an incredibly robust group of alumni working in our business. Montreal, one of my favorite cities, another place that really screams creativity and also punches above its weight at that intersection of creativity and technology. So I'd love to start our conversation by talking about McGill and the great city of Montreal.
Love it. Love the city of Montreal. So thanks for the opportunity to talk about it. What can I tell you? If there was a word to describe the city, I think I would pick diversity in every way. It's a extremely diverse city. Lots of people from different parts of the world. And I think you really, you mentioned McGill, and I think it really comes together at McGill. You can really see that in the student body. It's a college that I think it's one of the oldest colleges in North America. So quite a bit of history, even though you correctly mentioned you don't hear about it that often. Interestingly enough, most people I speak to in North America have heard of McGill. It's certainly a school that I continue to meet alumni from all of the time. Throughout my travels in the world, it's great to be able to meet people that, have gone to the same university. And I think it's very, very representative of Montreal.
Yeah, incredible farm system for talent. The only thing I will just say, not in a disparaging manner, but I do question the health benefits of poutine, which the Montrealers are very proud of, but that's just not good for you. All that cheese on those French fries, that's not on any nutritionist's recommended list of foods to eat.
You know, it's so funny that you mentioned poutine. I haven't had poutine in so long until this weekend. And just coincidentally yesterday, I took the family out for lunch, and it's getting nicer here in Montreal. Springtime always gets us really excited because we tend to have long, cold winters. And I had poutine. So thank you for the reminder that it's not good for me.
So let's go back about 20 years, Boško, as we move off poutine into the technology world. And you did some great work for a company, Cosette, that is so well regarded, really one of the iconic shops. And you were there at a time when development of, so-called rich media was really in its infancy. Can we go back to that period and talk about Cosette and let's call it the early days of rich media?
Yeah, man, you really did your research. I actually started my experience in the advertising industry at Cosette close to 20 years ago now. So you're really taking me back. It was a great, great time to be in digital advertising. It was a period where there was, at least I perceived a lot of, looking back now, a lot of transformational changes. Rich media and the advent of rich media was one of these. And what was really interesting and perhaps somewhat unusual is that when I worked at Cosette, I actually worked on ad serving technology, which was unusual to see within, an agency like Cosette. And what we were doing is integrating rich media into publisher environments, doing these kind of unusual and deep integrations where we would have rich media creative react to what's happening within the publisher environment or page. So I remember doing, integration work for, I think it was General Motors at the time, where we were serving creatives into car sites that would react when folks were navigating the car site and changing the car that they're searching for. So for example, you might search for, a BMW, and the creative would actually in real time propose offers from Cadillac. So those are kinds of integrations. You know, this was back probably in 2005, 2006. That was kind of how I cut my teeth in the digital advertising industry. It was through that experience at Gazette. And it was really great with me having, considering that I have a background in computer engineering, that introduction to the advertising industry from the perspective of an ad agency was particularly formative and really sort of blew my mind. I had a great time at Gazette.
And you then become the co-founder of a company at a pretty young age for the first time. Have an incredible run at AdGear. You're CTO, you're a co-founder. Talk about that decision, because it also involves being an entrepreneur, and that's a very different skill set.
Yeah, I think I've always, even during my time at Gazette and prior to Gazette, I worked a little bit in the telecommunications industry. And throughout this entire time of working, I spent a lot of my own kind of free time exploring ideas and trying to build things really on the web. And the web, remember, I mean, this was, I grew up in the 90s. So I experienced kind of the internet pre-web or the very early web through, I remember it was initially CompuServe. And then, you know, there was a proliferation of these small internet providers here in Canada and Montreal that were, you know, offering dial-up internet. So I grew up through that entire period. And then what drew me towards digital advertising was actually the challenges, the engineering challenges that I perceived. You know, here was the beginning of an industry that you had to deal with basically internet scale problems from day one. And that's, you know, ultimately what drew me into Gazette, the opportunity to work on internet scale problems. AdGear, you can kind of look at it as the continuation of all of that, in that we realized, you know, building ad serving tech within an agency, I mentioned earlier that, now, that's not normally where ad tech is built. Agencies tend to be large service businesses. It's not always easy for service businesses to make product investments. I think we were fortunate that we worked at an agency that understood that, and understood that if we're going to build real, you know, ad tech solutions, we need to make considerable upfront investments. And so around 2008 or so, we actually spun out the work that we were doing at Gazette and created what eventually became AdGear. And AdGear was an ad serving company back in the 2008 to 2010 period, which is the period where programmatic advertising really became a thing. Before that, we were serving ads the old way, you know, trafficking tags to each other, ad networks, providing scale across, you know, groups of publishers. With 2008 came really the advent of programmatic advertising, the birth of advertising exchanges and SSPs. And that was really the impetus for launching AdGear, you know, outside of the agency, leaving the agency, and really building an ad system that was capable of dealing with this new reality of programmatic advertising, where, you know, ads were bought and sold in milliseconds, server to server, and it really revamped, you know, the entire landscape of digital advertising was revamped as a result of those changes.
Boshko, you talked about a passion for building things. Go back to where the roots of that really began. Is that something that as a kid, you know, I know so many folks from where you hail from in Serbia, the old, you know, formerly Yugoslavia. I have a lot of friends from Romania, really just so progressive in so many ways, around almost an inborn, if you will, a natural inclination to embrace technology, to understand technology, to become an engineer before you were an engineer. Was this something that you were always curious about as a young guy growing up?
You know, I think I would attribute my curiosity for building things and just engineering really to my dad. You know, my dad is a mechanical engineer by training. Before we left, you know, the former Yugoslavia, he was working as a mechanical engineer in the aerospace industry in the former Yugoslavia. And then, you know, eventually when we immigrated to Canada, eventually he ended up working at Bombardier. And indeed, that's where he retired. But very early on, he got interested in computers. And I think, you know, where he worked in the former Yugoslavia, he happened to have access to one of these early console computers, and it always sort of piqued an interest in him, such that when we immigrated to Canada in 1989, actually one of his first jobs was working the night shift as a VAX VMS operator. For those who don't know, you know, VAX VMS were these old mainframe systems. And the consequence of him doing that actually was that because he was working nights, you know, he had a young family, he actually ended up buying a PC and with a modem, which was, you know, unusual in the early 90s. But the consequence of that purchase was it gave me as a young kid access to a computer with a modem in it. And then obviously my father and my experience growing up and seeing him basically go back to aerospace engineering after that initial experience and getting a job in Bombardier and then working there, I think that sort of innately kind of embedded this curiosity and I think what eventually culminated in a passion for building things and engineering and just being able to stick to seeing a problem and being able to stick to it for a long time and really figuring it out, you know, and teasing out the nuances of the problem to get to a solution. That's just something I think that was wired in me from a very early age.
Great, great story, Bashko. I love that it starts with your dad. You mentioned early days of programmatic. You were also there in the early days of smart TV advertising and analytics when it meant something a little bit differently than it means today. Can we talk about that work and what you did with Samsung Ads?
So at AdGear, we built a demand-side platform, so DSP. And AdGear was acquired by Samsung Electronics in, I think it was 2016. And at the time, Samsung Ads was just getting started. The goal of acquiring AdGear was to really power the advertising technology stack for Samsung Ads and what eventually became Samsung Ads. So I spent a few years at Samsung helping integrate AdGear both operationally, but also its product and engineering organizations within the broader Samsung Ads organization. What was really interesting at Samsung was that, and continues to be, that Samsung has this incredible data asset rooted in the connected television system that they have. And that asset is really underpins many of the media products that Samsung Ads sells to brands and advertisers. And so having the opportunity to build that was really exciting, you know, and really taking this technology that we had built at AdGear and applying it on just some of the most interesting data was really exciting. And I got to see firsthand, you know, also some of the challenges that exist when you're trying to do that at scale, not just technological challenges, but also, frankly, business and legal challenges, especially in an environment, a data regulation environment that was very evolving at the time. That's the period post 2016 when we saw, for example, GDPR develop and get implemented in the European economic area. So that was really a very formative experience for me and ultimately led to co-founding Optibl.
And you have two co-founders. How did the three of you all get together?
So I actually started working with my two co-founders back at Cassette. So we've been working together for close to 20 years now through thick and thin. I've seen certainly seen a lot of adversity throughout the building of AdGear. And as you might know, any business and the journey of entrepreneurship is not like a flat line, right? You know, there's lots of ups and downs. And these are two people that I think work really well with. We're very complementary. And so it's the same team really that has stuck together throughout the last 18, 19 years now.
And between you, Yves, and Vlad, are the strengths complementary? Is there overlap? Do you naturally gravitate to different aspects of Optibl's business? How does the dynamic work? That's an enlightened oligarchy, I guess one might say, to have three co-founders.
Yeah, I mean, we have different strengths. Certainly, we also are, all three of us are longtime entrepreneurs. My two other partners are actually, you know, they've been at it for longer than I have. I think for Yves, this is probably his, I want to say, fourth company now. And for Vlad, I think this is number three. So I'm actually the young in the group, with Optibl being my second business. I think having a shared belief system and shared values has really helped. And these are people that also, having been long-time entrepreneurs, they have a mentality of doing what's needed to build a business, which means that there's a flexibility. One of the biggest problems I find in can be rigidity from people. You might run into people who are extremely rigid and difficult to adapt. So those types of people tend to have difficulty adapting to new and dynamic situations. And that's what entrepreneurship, you know, brings upon you, is a lot of situations where you need to be able to adapt. And so what I like about working with Vlad and Eve is they're able to do that. And they're always trying to do what's needed to win. And sometimes that means not being stuck to one's ways and just doing the same thing over and over again. And our roles have indeed evolved throughout both the AdGear and the Optimal journey.
Sounds like all the ingredients of a successful partnership. So let's get into Optimal. And I love the positioning around audiences in real time. You're touching a lot of areas. You're around insights. You have a platform that's obviously tech driven, but has a certain flexibility built into it that I think is unique to what you've created at Optimal. So can we start to really dig into the Optimal story and take us behind the curtain, if you will?
Yeah, I'd love to. So Optimal, you know, at a high level is a data management activation and collaboration platform. It sounds like a lot, but these are functions that we believe to work well for digital advertising need to be seamlessly integrated. Really, we started Optimal in early 2020 because of the cumulative experiences that we've had working in digital advertising for close to 20 years now. The change that we've started to see in the digital advertising industry and its regulation, especially with respect to how user data is collected and used. And we saw that there was a need when it comes to the use of user data in digital advertising, there was an increasing need to do it differently and to do it in a way that is better aligned with evolving regulations. And ultimately, what that means is having a privacy by design and by default design. I could give you, I mean, the best way to understand this is through examples. If you think about a publisher that, you know, it interacts with users and is in a situation or in a position where they can collect user data and then use it to power advertising. And you think about brands, right, that maybe have loyalty programs or customer databases, CRMs, that also collect user data. There is a way, it turns out, for these two parties to come together, use user data in a way that's responsible and that minimizes data leakage and unnecessary information transfer between the parties, meaning that if the publisher and the advertiser, for example, are interested in reaching an audience of users that is the intersection of the brand's customers and the publisher's users, and they're interested in understanding the characteristics of those users, of those intersecting users, they don't need to share their data with one another. There is a way to do these things where they can both independently control and limit what information is exchanged about these intersections and these matches of data. But it requires technology, right? And in particular, it requires an accessible way to use the technology. It needs to be easy for them to do these things for advertising, but to do them in a way that is congruent with this principle of data minimization and minimization of information and data leakage. So that is kind of the realization that prompted creating Optimal. And then when, you know, as we got deeper and deeper into it, we realized, well, there's a bunch of different ways to accomplish this. There are clean rooms now that make comparing first party data doable in a way that limits information exchange and provides technical controls to advertisers and publishers and ultimately data controllers to help them limit information exchange and leakage. And then there are new APIs, you know, the browsers are now creating. Privacy Sandbox being a really good example of one that Chrome has created. And then again, make it possible to leverage user data and digital advertising in a way that limits information exchange and leakage. And that ultimately is also better for end user privacy.
Let's dig into that Privacy Sandbox a little bit deeper, because it's really such an interesting thing that you've created there.
Yeah. So, I mean, first of all, we didn't create the privacy sandbox. For those who might not be aware, the Google Chrome web browser has announced that they will be deprecating the third-party cookie. If you're in the digital advertising industry, hopefully this isn't news any longer. But in parallel to that announcement, they developed a new set of APIs called the Privacy Sandbox APIs. And these are APIs inside of the Chrome web browser that enable relevant digital advertising that is targeted to user data. But it is done in a way that protects the user data and that ultimately protects user privacy. So data remains in the browser, but advertisers can submit campaigns and bids into the Chrome browser to run targeting user data, which again, does not need to leave the web browser. So we find this really exciting. I mentioned Optible is a data management platform. What that means is that it helps publishers and advertisers collect and manage user data. And we see the Chrome Privacy Sandbox as a way to activate that data. And we think that there is a need in this industry for platforms and capabilities that enable that activation. We think that the traditional demand side platforms do not operate with these APIs yet. We're hoping to see more and more vendors lean into them and adopt them in the months ahead. But we, as Optible, see a huge opportunity in integrating with them directly, and this is what we've done. So if you are an Optible customer, you can leverage data inside of your Optible account to activate protected audience campaigns through the Chrome Privacy Sandbox.
You've made me into such an Optible fan. I'm giving you credit for something that Chrome developed, but it's a great, great story the way you told it. When you, even Vlad, are sitting around talking about where we're heading, which is that cookieless environment, this has been coming for a couple years now. How do you think the industry on the whole is doing in preparing for what's next?
Great question. So I think this deprecation of third-party cookies, to your point, has been coming for a while, but I don't think that everybody in the industry wanted to really accept it for some time. I mentioned we co-founded Optible, or we started Optible back in 2020. That was the same year that Chrome had actually announced that they will be deprecating the third-party cookie. I believe it was in February of 2020, if memory serves me correctly. And alongside with that announcement, they also announced that the availability of these privacy sandbox APIs eventually, and they started efforts to develop those APIs. They did this in the open, actually, through the W3. So this started back in 2020, but I think it took the advertising industry a few years to sort of take it seriously. And I think there was a period of denial, and I sensed a real change toward the end of last year and the beginning of this year when they finally decided to deprecate cookies for 1% of the Chrome user base. And I think I've noticed a sort of awakening in the industry where there's been a lot more interest now and also urgency to test these APIs and ultimately evaluate them and figure out like what is the best way to adopt them. So I think I'm an optimist. I've seen this kind of change before. Like I've seen it happen back in 2008, 2009, when the industry was being completely changed by the advent of programmatic advertising, the birth of OpenRTB. There were a lot of changes and there were winners and losers that came out of that. Some of the changes were good, some were bad. There were a lot of laggards also, you know, a lot of deniers, people who didn't believe it was going to happen until it did. And I think that's what's happening again now.
So if we're looking into our Optible crystal ball together, Boshko, and we're doing this again in a year, where do you think we'll be relative to the issue that we're talking about here, that advent of a cookieless environment?
So I think there's going to be a better understanding, hopefully a wider understanding of what works and what doesn't. There's still a lot of these technologies are still new for people this year because of this laggard effect. But I think a year from now, we're going to have a much better idea. And hopefully we'll also have some time at that point where the web and digital advertising on the web you know, has existed for some time without third-party cookies altogether, you know, or certainly, you know, without third-party cookies in Chrome for more than 1% of users. And I think that those kinds of periods, those forcing functions are good, they're healthy, and I think we'll get there hopefully a year from today.
Well, and it sounds like Optibull is positioned very well for where we are now, but more importantly, where we're going. And that's to your credit and that of your co-founders.
Yeah, thank you so much, Matthew. I think it's not just positioning, but really the reason for its existence. If it wasn't for these changes, if the web was not fundamentally being disrupted by these changes, I don't think we would have bothered to start another company in this space. In fact, the three of us, when we left Samsung in 2019, we thought we were done with digital advertising, as I'm sure is common in this industry. But we were, thankfully, we were brought back right into it in a few months later, especially as these changes were announced. And as it sort of became clear to us that, you know, a few years from then, we would be in a completely different ecosystem because of these highly disruptive changes.
Fantastic stuff. Well, this gets a big watch this space with all the changes coming in the industry, those that have already been announced and committed to, but have been slow to move, certainly slower than I think a lot of people would have thought 4 years ago. Like many things, things take time. Enjoyed this conversation thoroughly, and let's both agree to lay off the poutine. And thank you, Boshko, for doing this. A real pleasure to have you on Great Minds.
Thanks so much, Matthew. Yeah, I can't make any promises about the poutine, but I'll do my best.
All right.